Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, an interesting guest today, John Merrick from Consumer Cellular. John is the co-founder and CEO of Consumer Cellular, one of the largest and longest operating mobile virtual network operators, MVNO, of cellular phone service in the United States. Top-rated wireless carrier provides no-contract cell phones and service plans primarily to those 50 and above. And this is going to be their 25th anniversary in October. First of all, John, thank you for being on the show. Congratulations, a milestone anniversary in October. 25 years. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Alan, thanks for having me. Excited to be here. And yeah, we're super excited. We've actually been working our way up all year, kind of counting down to that 25-year anniversary. So as you say, an important milestone for us as a company.
Well, this is an interesting thing that you guys are doing. And who would think that they could go up against the big cell companies? You know, it's mind-boggling to even imagine trying AT&T or any of these. But you guys found a little niche, or niche, as I say, for your customers being those 50-plus. And I want to tell everybody that Consumer Cellular has been recognized providing the best customer experience by J.D. Power and Associates 8 times in a row, and they're approaching 4 million customers right now. J.D. Power, if you don't know what that is the voice of the customer. So when you buy something, you get a little form that says, you know, how was the service, how is the product, so on and so forth. And 8 times in a row, John, that is another huge accomplishment. Congrats on that, too.
Thanks very much. Yes, something we're very proud of.
So when you started this out 25 years ago, October, with your co-founder, partner, did you think that it was ever going to grow to this size of a company? You originally had, just a handful of customers, $2,000 in revenue, and now today, more than 3 million, actually closing in on 4 million customers, 2,000 employees, and over $1 billion in revenue. That's crazy. It's wild.
Yeah. It's kind of almost hard to believe or hard to imagine for us. Certainly at the time when we started, we had no idea we'd get to this point. And, you know, if you think back to where the cellular industry was, 25 years ago, completely different than it is now. So I don't think anybody would have thought, we were going to get here. But, fast forward and through a lot of hard work and some good decisions, we've been very fortunate to hit some major milestones.
So when you started, can you give us your frame of thought? What were you thinking? Did you want to have a big company? Did you just want to give it a try, see what we can do? Where were you in your head at that time?
Well, we definitely wanted to get big, but I think, our idea of big was not quite where we've been able to accomplish. So, we set our expectations pretty high based on where the cellular industry was at the time and what we thought we could do. You know, we really kind of came into the market. Both Greg and I, the two co-founders, had worked in the cellular industry, and we saw a void really for people that wanted access to cellular service, but at a more affordable rate than was available in the marketplace. Right. Back then it was still very much kind of, your power user, your elite business users were the only ones that had cellular service. And when you looked at all the safety and security that cellular provided, we wanted to help people gain access to that. So that was really where we started off at. And, we knew that there would be a lot of people that could benefit from it. And we were fortunate to get in early, the early days of cellular, so we could kind of grow with the industry as well.
And why people 50 and over? I mean, I think I can probably answer that, but I want to hear from you.
I'd like to say we were really smart up front and chose that to begin with. But like I say, we really actually started more focused on kind of a usage need, people that wanted the safety and convenience of cellular service. And like all good small, entrepreneurs, when we tried going out and finding who best to talk to and how to market that message, we saw that, an older crowd, seniors, were responding really well. So we really kind of pivoted our business and said, well, let's focus on that senior demographic and not only meet their needs from a pricing standpoint, but make sure we're doing everything we can across our service to meet their needs. Right. And that clearly has worked very well for us.
I love it. Well, I'm in that 50 and over, and I also love that you guys don't have a contract. No contract. Who does that? Well, I guess more and more of them are starting to because you guys have led the way. But John Merrick joining us, CEO and co-founder, Consumer Cellular. All companies along the way in 25 years have stumbling blocks, but those are learning times. We're going to find out from John what some of his were. We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly. You've been called in.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages.
Well, this is Entrepreneur Weekly. Welcome back. And guest today, John Merrick, CEO and co-founder, Consumer Cellular. These guys started out with just 3 employees, $2,000 in revenue, and now they've turned that into more, you know, almost 4 million customers, 2,000 employees, and more than a $1 billion in revenue, and also boasting 20 to 30% growth year over year. But John, along the way, no matter what size company you have, you know, you stub your toe, you fall down on your knee, sometimes you break your tooth, but that teaches you something, and I'm hoping you don't mind sharing some of those lessons along the way that really actually helped to accelerate in the long run your business.
Yeah, absolutely. Lessons learned. You know, I think the first thing that really kind of jumps out at me really has been on the employee side. You know, as we've grown, you go back to our early days and it's super easy to kind of develop that culture. And, you know, things as simple as, you know, you're driving to work and you think, I'm going to grab some donuts for everybody and tell them how much we appreciate their effort. Works well when you've got, you know, 10 or 20 people, but, you know, now that we're over 2,000 and right. multiple offices, multiple states,
yeah.
You don't just stop on the way in for some donuts.
Right.
So it's really kind of forced us to be more thoughtful and intelligent and determined about how we keep that culture going and keep people engaged and really show our appreciation for our employees and how hard they work for us. You know, the other side that jumps out at me is taking care of our customers because, you know, much the same way, you know, as we went from a handful of customers to, you know, nearly 4 million, you know, it creates all kinds of challenges. And one of the things that we always have attributed our success to is having consumer-friendly policies and not letting, you know, a policy get in the way of taking care of a customer. And as you get bigger, it's easy for some of those things to kind of sneak in. And so we're always kind of challenging ourselves and saying, you know, what can we do to make sure that we're not letting something that we think is important to us get in the way of taking care of our customers?
Yeah. Well, I think, too, you actually picked a tough crowd to deal with because 50 and over, they understand what good service is. They've had it in their life, and it seems to be going away a little bit, sadly, because we've become such a digital universe. You know, the older people have greater expectations, and they don't mind opening their mouths, and evidently they have, because J.D. Power has given you, you know, 8 times the Customer Satisfaction Award. You guys, I could see part of this culture with 2019. You guys contributed $350,000 to the American Red Cross Disaster Relief Fund, $1.5 million between Meals and Wheels and Providence Cancer Institute and Shriners Hospitals for Children. And you have a lot of stuff going on. So you guys, at this point, this 25-year mark, you have learned a lot about business and employees and customers. My question is, in this digital world, what is next for this company, Consumer Cellular? Because we continue to evolve it as a world, but there's also, you know, challenges in front of us.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think for us, you know, continuing to do a great job with our core business is super important. And so how do we just continue to grow that? Because even though we're at 4 million customers, we know that there's, you know, many, many more million that really could benefit from our service, that we're going to save them money. We're going to provide them a higher level of service than they're getting today. So we definitely don't want to lose focus on just what we're really, really good at. But we've also been finding other ways to use wireless technology to bring people together. And, you know, as the times have changed and oftentimes some of the seniors who either aren't comfortable with technology or are struggling with that get left behind and just family connectedness as we're all busy with our days.
Right.
So we've been rolling out products and services that allow us to help customers use technology to bring their families back together. And even somebody that's never used technology or isn't comfortable with it, we can get them up and running running, and so they can do things like video calls and share pictures and all the things that, you know, help us stay connected with our families even when we can't be with them.
Yeah. My dad is going to be 93. My mom is 90. And my dad has this iPad kind of a thing. It's actually not an iPad. It's a what they call tablet. And through Facebook, I have like a call list, and it's got pictures of each one of his kids and grandkids. And he just touches it, and it rings us up through FaceTime. And we have this conversation because, as you know, the people that are elders, they're not supposed to be around people right now. So we're just, you know, we're obeying that because we think it's wise. And but we still have that relationship with my parents, thank God, because we don't know how long we're going to have.
Yeah, it's great that technology can help.
Absolutely. All right, one more segment with you, and you get to be the professor in the next segment and teach a little entrepreneur stuff going on here. Entrepreneur Weekly, John Merrick, CEO and co-founder, Consumer Cellular, recognized providing the best customer experience by J.D. Power & Associates 8 times in a row. We're going to find out the secret sauce coming up next.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
My guest today from Consumer Cellular, the CEO and co-founder, John Merrick. I cheated a little bit, asked him how old he was in the commercial break. Said, how old are you? He says, I'm 56, which so I did the math, and he was 31 when he started Consumer Cellular. Now with almost 4 million customers, 2,000 employees, and over $1 billion in revenues. What advice would you now, as that senior that you, that is your customer, that senior that you are now, you know, because you look back and 31-year-old, you know, I have a 32-year-old son. So I still look at him like he's just such a young man. As this more senior man, what advice would you give to this young John Merrick at 31 starting out in the business world?
Well, there's a couple of things I think we've learned over the years. You know, certainly I think one of the best things that's helped us in our success is finding that underserved market, you know, for us that niche is the senior demographic. And, and you know, by finding something that's not being served very well, it almost kind of creates a differentiator for us in an industry that's, you know, bordering on a commodity. So so that certainly I think has been super key and would have been a great thing to hear up front. We were fortunate to get there, but to hear it up front. I think the other thing that we've learned is, you know, you can't do it alone. You know, over the years, we've had just some really great partnerships that help us to achieve our success and the great team of employees that we've been able to bring on. So, you know, figuring out how to develop those and find the right people to work with to help you achieve your goals and get to where you want to be is certainly key.
Yep. I want a number three. Okay, here's what my notes. Underserved market, very, very important. Can't do it alone. No man is a mountain, as they say, but you definitely can't. I've had bigger businesses and smaller businesses, and right now, because of the COVID thing, I have less employees than I've ever had. Many of the ones I do have are at home, and some of them are dealing with their families with, you know, illnesses and what have you, and all of a sudden I find I'm the guy that's swinging the sledgehammer, breaking the concrete open to put, you know, a new grease trap in for a restaurant we're starting. I'm the guy that's, you know, lifting the concrete blocks out for the parking lot that we just seal coated and striped. And I'm the guy. It's like I always had somebody to go do this really ugly job, you know. But I actually like it because it brings me back to where I started, the roots of the hard work that it takes to do whatever it takes to get the job done. So underserved market, can't do it alone. I want a number three.
You know, I think the other thing is just that there's no silver bullets out there, right? It's just, it's kind of working hard and doing the simple things right. You know, lots of times people come to us and say, wow, you've run, you know, 8 GD Power Awards. You know, what is it that you do differently? And, you know, we step back and there's nothing that's really special. I mean, you know, we ask our employees to be nice and friendly, to treat people with respect, you know, make sure you're knowledgeable and able to help them solve their problems. And you know, let's provide them a great value. And, you know, turns out people really respond well to that. And our employees are happy and our customers are happy. And, you know, we've been able to grow really well. So I think that'd be my third one is just, you know, rather than looking for the silver bullet, just, you know, work hard and do the little things right every day.
I love it. And that's a good one. Do the hard work. Because, I mean, literally, that is what got you there, was doing the hard work, using your virtues and your values, putting them in place as, you know, kind of the cornerstone of your business, was caring about your customers. And then once you started getting a lot of customers, and you said it in the interview about, you know, used to be you could take a box of donuts to work. What are you going to do? 2,000 donuts now? You know, shipping them all over the country? No, you have to really plan, because people don't plan to fail. They fail to plan, right? And so, absolutely. I mean, this is not rocket science. It boils down to wonderful common sense that our God gave us, you know what I mean? That is not so common anymore, because people think they can get that silver bullet. They want to buy the silver bullet. They want to go and have somebody, you know, teach them these principles that they didn't have before they started this quest that they're on. And so guess what? My advice to people in this kind of a situation is, if you have never worked hard, go work for somebody and be the best employee you can possibly be, which will help you to be a better boss someday. And, you know, everybody wants to have that job and not ever have to work hard to have that job as the boss. You know what I mean?
Leapfrog to it, yeah.
Yeah, and leapfrog, exactly right. Well, that is awesome. So real quickly, what do you think about what's going on in the world today? Is this going to change your business at all? I mean, it actually sounds to me like, because of all this quarantine stuff, that it actually may help your business accidentally.
Yeah, I mean, certainly from a demand for our services and the things that we're able to provide our customers, there has never been more demand for that, right? So lots of opportunities there for us to meet customers' needs. And, you know, quite honestly, the challenge has been on the employee side. Like you said, you know, yeah, people are dealing with a lot of stuff. And
right,
so as we continue to grow, you know, making sure that we've got enough employees to take care of our customers and do the things we need to do is a bit of a challenge that we'll continue to work through. So, things look really, really fortunate for us and bright, and we're excited. You know, the first 25 years, first 4 million, you know, those were the easy ones. Now we're going to keep going and see how far we can take this.
Well, best of luck to you. John Merrick, he says, understand your business. Check out the underserved market, which he did. You cannot do it alone. There is no silver bullet. Hard work is what it takes. And love your customers and your employees. That's awesome. All right, John, thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan.
All right, we'll take a little break. This is Entrepreneur Weekly.
There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
So our next guest, his name is J. Douglas Holliday. He is the author of Rethinking Success, 8 Essential Practices for Finding Meaning in Work and Life. He's also the founder and CEO of Path North, a nonprofit dedicated to helping business owners and CEOs define success more broadly. He's also a professor at Georgetown University, where he teaches an MBA course. And he was an investment banker at Goldman Sachs and a White House advisor and special ambassador to South Africa. What have you not done, Doug? I mean, oh my gosh.
Alan, I can't keep a job.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's funny. Well, first of all, I love this. Rethinking success. You know, somebody sent me something. It was just like today or yesterday, this morning. I get so many little notes people send me. You know, what is success? How do you define success?
Yeah.
You are now rethinking success. Let's talk about that. Money, power, influence. What is success, Doug?
Well, you're getting to the heart of why I wrote the book, Alan, because I felt like the unintended consequences of the way success has been classically defined as money, fame, power doesn't deliver on its promise. In fact, it actually does the opposite. It actually isolates people, and they find themselves not in a happy place, sometimes losing their families, sometimes just really lonely and depressed and wondering, is that all there is? So I looked at an Inc. study once that said over half of CEOs, this is a sampling of 3,000 CEOs, half of them said that they were lonely and disconnected. Of that half, 67% said since they don't have anybody to trust, they're making bad business decisions. So this is a crisis. This is a crisis in business because we need others in our life for data points and for support and for perspective. And sadly, the most successful in our midst often find themselves desperately alone. And as a result, it doesn't produce good things. So I'm just really kind of reimagine it and say, okay, what is success really about? How should we imagine it? How should we think about it? And that's the purpose of this book.
Yeah. I just found what my friend sent me. He said, the older I get, the more I realize that family is key to happiness and should always be the center of our lives. This was this morning, 5 hours ago, just so you know.
Yeah.
And it's in the ether that people are looking to redefine what true happiness is. We thought it was cars and big homes and, you know, lots of money and things and things and things. But we've found that a lot of us turn into hoarders because we're not ever getting, you know, satisfied because it's not true joy. It's not true happiness. It's just more things. They end up owning you.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, I really contrast in that regard, Alan, the difference between happiness and meaning. Happiness is circumstantial. I have a lot of money. I just bought a second house. My kid got into a good college. All these things. But they can go in a second, as we can see during this meltdown because of the coronavirus. Meaning is a much more profound, deeper thing.
To get
your handle, you know, if you doubt me about the difference, I have three boys. If you said to me, Doug, is it a happy experience raising three boys? I'd say, well, yes, well, no, sometimes, yeah. Is it the other question? Is it a meaningful experience? Oh, my gosh, the most meaningful thing I've ever done in life.
Yes.
So meaning is very different than happiness. So, you know, Viktor Frankl, the psychotherapist who wrote the book about his experience in the Nazi death camps, what he observed in those death camps, the people that survived were not the physically robust, but those who had a greater purpose beyond the suffering, beyond their circumstances. So I think, you know, this is a moment where it's really revealing who we really are. And also the myth of certainty is coming crashing down. So people are rethinking everything. Is there a future for my kids? What about happening to my 401k? Is my business okay? Can I make it? Half the restaurants in some cities are going out of business.
Yeah,
this is not a happy time.
Right. Yeah, there was just a study.
So we have to look someplace. So I'm urging us to look someplace else to find meaning.
Yeah.
Meaning can be seized upon whatever the season in your life, whatever's happening to you in the external world.
All right, we have a break in about 2 minutes. Could you give us just a taste of, you know, some advice for, you know, how they can grasp a hold of meaning, joy? Because, I mean, again, joy and happiness are two different things as well. So get us started.
Absolutely.
We've got a couple more segments to go.
So I'd say on that, Alan, I'd say start to think about an inward journey, not the external journey. And what do I mean by that? Take some time every day to really think. Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living. This is a moment to really still ourselves and to really look at our life. What's the story you were born into? How has that shaped your view of happiness, joy, freedom? What are all these narratives? Where did they come from? And are they working? So that's step one, is look at the story you're born into. Step two is to get comfortable with yourself. And what I mean by that, start these practices of meditation, of prayer, of really thinking about what really matters, of having lists of gratitude. You know, neuroscientists say, you know, when we do that, when we're really our thing.
Uh-oh, we lost him. Let me take a commercial break and bring back Doug Holliday. What a great conversation. You know, Buddha said something, a man who conquers himself is greater than one who conquers 1,000 men in battle. This is Entrepreneur Weekly. We'll be right back with more. Doug Holliday, stay with us. It's all right.
Discover unstoppable industry influencers who celebrate disruptive thinking and game-changing business strategies on Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Hey, don't forget, check out our website, entrepreneur.com, and you can find all kinds of great podcasts and videos and teachings there, along with this show, Entrepreneur Weekly. Doug Holliday joining us, author of Rethinking Success. Welcome back to the show, Doug.
Thank you, Alan. Sorry, I got the shaft there, but I'm back. Right.
That's all right. You were making a great, great point about self-awareness. I said to you, I think something to the effect of, where do we get started on this rethinking success? And it does start at the core of who we are as human beings. So I'm going to let you pick it up from there and run with it again.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. What this time has revealed is the mythology around certainty has come crashing down.
Yeah.
All the things we thought were permanent that we could count on, Alan, are really under assault now. And my 401k, my future, the future of my kids, all these things. So I think you have to say, okay, there's a lot we can't control. What can we control? We can control becoming the very best version of ourselves that's possible. This is a good moment to start to do that. And you do that by creating space and stop running, but creating space where you actually think, where you actually feel, where you actually started a little diary and write down what's going on with you, what you're learning about life. And this is a great time to really start to use gratitude to your advantage, to really start to think, is life working for me? How do I make it better? How do I forgive those people? Instead of being a person of grievance, how do I go back to people, make it right? But a lot of this presupposes we're willing to do the work and really think about why that's really important. So if you don't want to do it for yourself, Alan, one of the things I was reading lately was a book by a top psychiatrist at Johns Hopkins University. And he said this, and it's really interesting. He said, you know, all the strategies that we've kind of tried to instill in our kids, all the things we've taught them and said to be aware of and be this kind of person. This psychiatrist, after all of his storied career and all the years, he said, none of that amounts to anything. There's only one thing that really matters, and that's how you live your life. And so in a funny way, Alan, the best thing I can do for my kids, my three boys, my wife, my company, my world has become the healthiest person I can be. So in one sense, it's simpler and more complex. We want it to be very complex where we have to do all these complicated things. It's really one thing, become the best you.
Yeah. Where did you learn all this? Because, I mean, so many people are searching for these answers. And listen, I appreciate the book, Rethinking Success. And I'm sure you've taken a lifetime of all this. But was there a place that you started, or did you just start by asking God? Or, you know, give us just the genesis of your journey.
I learned this only a few years ago. I always wondered why I was always about the business of creating safe spaces in unconventional places like the White House, State Department, Goldman Sachs, creating safe places where people can explore what really matters. Mm. And I realized it goes back to my father's story. And I was born into that story. In my father's story, he grew up in a small town in Mississippi. His mother was very religious, a church-going woman. He went to church, but he asked a lot of questions. And in those days, that wasn't exactly celebrated or invited.
Right.
So he withdrew and he said, well, I guess if I'm not into that, I must be an atheist. So he, whether he was or not, we lived, you know, basically with no religious influence. I grew up in a very secular household, but ideas were really prized. In my late teens, I met up with some people who had a faith. And for me, it was like a light went on. I started to really understand the difference between religion and a real vital faith. Mm. And that began to be a journey of exploration. I saw faith as glasses to help me interpret the world and to really, really come at the world with enthusiasm and great anticipation. It wasn't like this fearful thing, oh, the world's terrible. I just became more and more curious. And so I got curious about people's stories. I've loved hearing what makes them tick, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I realized we're all broken. I tell my class the first day, this MBA class I teach on meaning, the first day I say your point of identity with everybody is not how smart you are, how accomplished, but how broken we all are. We all have parts of us that aren't working. And if I could tell one story, Alan, it was really powerful. I did that in class one day, and this young man on the front row said to me, Professor, I've been wanting to get this class. I finally am in. I'm going to be all in. This is the first 5 minutes. He said, my whole life I've lived in the shadows. I've had a debilitating stutter, which caused me to have no friends. But I was very strong academically. Went to an Ivy League school. My sophomore year, I decided life isn't worth living like this with no relationships. Decided I was going to take my life. But before I do, I'm going to reach out to people, and I will stutter. I won't be able to put two sentences together. They'll laugh at me. So I'll at least know it just punctuates the fact that my life isn't worth living. So he started doing that, reaching out to people. The more he talked, he found two things that happened. The less he stuttered, and the more he told them about his insecurities and problems with speaking, the more they shared their own weaknesses. And then he paused, Alan, like for dramatic effects. And guess what else, Professor? I said, what's that, Clark? He said, I'm the student body president of my Georgetown MBA class. I have to give speeches all the time. So I said to the class, I said, wow, okay, Clark's revealed something really amazing here in the first 5 minutes. I said, we're going to take a break. Probably a lot of you want to get out of this class because Clark, you know, he's not up to your standard. So how many of you want to go during the break and transfer out? Obviously, nobody raised their hand. How many of you feel safer because of what Clark shared? Every hand went up. I said, if you learn nothing else, remember, your point of identity is your weakness with others.
Isn't that beautiful? God love you for that. Hang with us. We're talking with Doug Holliday, author of the book Rethinking Success. We're going to talk about the 8 essential practices of finding meaning in work and life. I love you, man. You're awesome. Be right back. Are you paying too much for business insurance? Do you have critical gaps in your coverage? Entrepreneur Insurance can help you find out. In 6 out of 10 policies, business owners are paying too much for property, general liability, or workers' comp insurance. Entrepreneur Insurance can help you identify ways to save and any gaps in coverage. Head to entrepreneur.com/insurance to complete the questionnaire and get a personalized quote. It's an easy way to find out if you're paying too much. Again, that's entrepreneur.com/insurance.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
J. Douglas Holliday, Doug Holliday, joining us. He is the author of the book, Rethinking Success, 8 Essential Practices for Finding Meaning in Work and Life. I'm loving this, man. You know what, Doug? If you could, I know we've only got about 5.5 minutes in this segment, but I would love for you to try and skip a rock and give us like a minute on the top ones. And I want people to realize that we do not have a firewall for our mind. And right now, there's so much propaganda and so much fear-based garbage being pumped into our minds with this pandemic that you would really need to find, you know, a better path to self-awareness. I think your book could help people.
I hope it can. You know, I was thinking as you were speaking, Marcel Proust said it this way. It said, the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. Ooh. I think what we need right now are new eyes.
Yeah,
because it's very fear-based today. Everything is, people are so fearful. So I'd say a couple things as I skip through this book. You know, I start with the premise, we're all born into someone else's story. Peter Buffett, Warren Buffett's son, told me this. We didn't ask to be born into that family, but that has shaped who we are largely. Our hopes, our dreams, how we view success, how we raise kids, how we treat a spouse. All these things came from someplace. So to be self-aware and examine who we are. You know, the second part of that is to realize, who is the audience you're living to please? Are you living to please that father you could never please? Or just a vague sense of the success that the culture's laid on you? So you've got to say at the end of the day, as you know, who is my audience? And this is where the Quakers, I think, nailed it. They said, we should live to please an audience of one. Whether you define that as God or yourself, it's one audience. Next is relationships. After 30, the average person sheds relationships. By the time they're 45, if they're lucky, they have one friend. We live, it's a loneliness epidemic. UCLA Loneliness Index says 1 out of 2 Americans self-report they're painfully lonely. We are a disconnected people. Robert Putnam of Harvard wrote the book Bowling Alone. He said bowling's a metaphor. It used to be a community exercise. Now, mostly people are alone at bowling alleys, strangely. So we need to develop a rich sense of a couple friends that we can go deep with that we trust in our lives. Then gratitude. Gratitude changes the chemistry of the brain. Just to say every day 1 or 2 things, God, I'm just grateful I'm alive, that I feel good, that I just had that great Italian roast coffee. Fantastic. Then learning to forgive. Not forgiving is like taking poison and expecting the other person to die. We've got to let it go. Being a person of grievance is so destructive to us. This is why Jesus says, forgive. It's for your sake, not for the other person. And it's not condoning them. And then the idea of finding out, like that poem, If, by Rudyard Kipling. It says, you can treat those two imposters, success and failure, the same. They both are imposters. You know, when we fail, that can really be used to make us a better version of ourselves. When our success is almost more dangerous than failure sometimes. And then risk. You know, at the end of life, this palliative nurse, Bonnie Ware, who had interviewed all these people in their last hours of life, the greatest regret most people in life had as they were ending was they wish they had taken more risk. They let fear dictate how they lived their life. And then last couple is just living an integrated life, Alan, to somehow figure out that everything fits. You don't have these compartments over here where business is here, my personal life's here, that somehow everything is a part of one whole cloth. It's so much better to live that way. You don't have to remember things that way. The last is leaving a legacy. Oh, my gosh. You know, I'll leave you with one story. Alfred Nobel wakes up about 1900. He's in Paris. Reads the daily paper in Paris, and headline says, Alfred Nobel, the merchant of death, is dead. Well, Alfred Nobel hadn't actually died. His brother, who was in southern France, died. But Alfred Nobel, it really rocked him to the core. And he said, is that going to be my legacy? Because his family, the Nobel family, had invented dynamite, which enabled epic killing on monumental level. He decided to change his legacy, and now we have the Nobel Prize and the Nobel Peace Prize.
Love it.
Changed his legacy.
All right.
So we can still change. Those of us who feel like we're stuck and we can't change our legacy, we can do it.
All right. People, seriously, go to Doug Holliday, HOLLADAY.com/the-book. Or just go to DougHolliday.com. You'll find his book. Once again, Rethinking Success. I do believe we are spiritually related. I love how you think, Doug. Thank you so much.
Likewise, Alan. Thank you, my brother.
All right.
Really enjoyed this.
Really fantastic. You made my day. Now, everybody.
Well, you made mine better.
Let's all go out and have a great day. See you next week.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.